There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Thank you to our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Faub, my co-host. Nasser will be joining us later on in the show. This is podcast number 294, July 24th, 2008. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast brought to you by Yahoo Ads. Yahoo Ads get you the F1Weekly.com website for the ads that interest you. From Austin Healey Wheelies to zebra skins for your shins, Yahoo Ads get you the stuff you really want. Click on them, you know you want to.
Thank you, Stephen, and we always thank Yahoo Ads. On today's program, is McLaren using pseudo-traction control? No slick tires for Kimi. Michelin and the A1 GP series, and of course, Motorsports Mondial with the king of Karachi himself, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Great. How about yourself, Mr. Rogers?
Absolutely wonderful. Had a great, great weekend last week with the German Grand Prix, with the Milka Duno Danica Patrick fight, with me fighting the bugs on my tomato plants. Absolutely outstanding. So, Steve, did you enjoy the race?
Yes, I did quite a bit. It was a pretty good race. Lots of passing, lots of intrigue.
And lots of lack of pace.
Well, everybody's complaining about it, that's for sure.
You know, a lot of people are blaming it on Bridgestone. They're blaming it on Ferrari. They're blaming it on Renault. They're blaming it on their managers. There's more blame than you can shake a stick at. The only people that we're not blaming is Lewis Hamilton because he just went out there and did his job.
Well, he won the race.
Yeah, well, that's
his
job.
And he was able to do... he survived his traction problems, unlike other people.
Well, apparently, there was news post-race that McLaren's got this new shifter on their steering wheel. Now they have four paddles instead of two. So we'll talk about that with Nasser as soon as he gets into the building. His driver called, and they're running a little late. So they put, you know what they do is they put the sirens on, and they get him here as fast as possible.
Probably had to stop for some Thai food or something.
I don't think so. Nothing like that. But anyway, no, I enjoyed the race. I thought it was really, really good. And, of course, the pinnacle of motorsports, and with Piquet on the second podium, I mean, I was freaking out. Number two, I couldn't believe it. Nobody could believe it. And everybody's knocking Fernando like he's a has-been. It's over.
Like, yes. Piquet gets a podium because his strategy timed out perfectly to an accident on the track, and Fernando's done. Come on. What is wrong with these people?
I know.
Come on. Piquet's been uncompetitive all season, and he pretty much lucks into this podium. Great strategy. You know, the strategy that Renault chose for this race worked to a dream because of Timo's accident right as he pulls into the pits, and everybody else was low on gas. So it's like, I'm actually surprised he didn't. What was amazing was the fact that only Lewis Hamilton could get past him.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, Felipe couldn't get past him, the BMWs couldn't get past him. I'm like, oh, wait a minute, what's wrong with this picture? Because if he were truly uncompetitive, they should have been able to catch him and pass him.
No, in the end, the Renault looked pretty good, and I was impressed with Piquet not only finishing the race, not making the big mistakes that we expect from him, breaking under pressure, but not only that, but he needed this podium for his mental stability and his maturing as a driver. I think he'll go in with a little more cockiness, that confidence that Vettel now has And, you know.
Good confidence boost for him, definitely, for that to work out and then to be able to hang on to it after everybody else got back on track.
Exactly. So now the red carpet has been rolled out and the King of Karachi has arrived. Nasser, how are you and welcome to the studio?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Hope everybody's well.
We are wonderful discussing the German Grand Prix. I know you love these things and your thoughts post Grand Prix and how exciting it was.
It sure was, but I have to say, you know, best part of waking up at 4 in the morning is not Folgers in your cup, it's Formula One on the web. And that's where I have to thank Mr. Tricky Dicky and you. And obviously you and I were watching, of course, at our own place. At the same time, you were exchanging some emails. So it was a great race, a great result. And as far as PK is concerned, you know, you take these things as they come. He lucked out. But, you know, there were days he was not lucky. And it was good to see him on the podium. And he really needed that, like you said.
He did that. And I think his parents needed it, too.
Yeah, especially his papito.
Yeah.
Yeah. He called once, you know, when he was in the junior leagues, he was, Nelson Piquet Sr. was asked if he would have his son do what is now GP2 in those days. It was Formula 3000. He says, no, because that's useless.
Of course.
So his son was getting to be quite useless in Formula 1, but he's slowly, you know, and happily salvaging his position. But, you know, the talking about the Folgers Cup, the webcast was good because it was roasted with a one-hour pre-race show. And what happened, you know, I was going to watch it at 10 o'clock and pretend it was live, so I didn't set the alarm. But I had left my, you know, computer on this, and automatically it started at 4 o'clock.
Yeah, it just comes on.
Yeah, and I says, what's going on? Has the time changed or something? It's showing 4 o'clock everywhere, and the race is at 5 o'clock, and it turns out, it dawned on me, this is a one-hour pre-race show. So I enjoyed that very much. They had interviews with Niki Lauda, Mika Hakkinen, and most important, no interruptions for living the low life and pings like we need that at 5 in the morning.
Some of your favorite shows.
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, Niki Lauda said, if you remember what he said in the interview, very important thing, which is something he alludes to in this book.
I like
also
what he said because it talks about the smartness of a world champion.
Yeah, he said anybody can go flat out among the drivers who are trying to win the championship, but the champion will be who knows how to live, be smart. And I think that is one thing that I'm concerned about Lewis Hamilton.
No, you're right. That was a great interview, and Lauda always has sometimes outlandish things to say.
And that's how two of his three championships were won.
Yeah, knowing when to lift. So yeah. Very deep and profound thoughts from Mr. Lauda.
Yeah, that's why they call him Super Rat, you know.
Is that what it is? Huh, I thought that had something to do with, I won't go there, but no, great stuff, and getting to watch the ITV coverage is wonderful, but now we go back. Well, what's nice is now that we have this streaming on the web, we could just watch that all the time.
You know, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, no, that's what I do. Even the qualifying, instead of watching it on speed, I watch it on the computer.
Oh, they do the qualifying also?
And the practice.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Did not know that.
It's I'm just hoping when I can stream the French coverage.
Yeah, that'll be nice.
It will. Exactly. So, okay, let's talk about the race, some of the results. First of all, okay, we know what Hamilton did. And we know
what did he do?
Oh, he won
the
race.
He lucked out again?
He did luck out, you know, and I'm really getting tired of it, but no. But we'll talk about McLaren and what I think about their four-paddle shifter later. But let's talk about the other teams that really underperformed, and your boy, Kimi.
Was he in the race?
Yeah, he was in the race.
Oh, okay.
But maybe he was still at the hotel. But no, Ferrari, another bad race, even though they did get points this time.
But, you know, it's how the media momentum shifts.
Oh, I love
Massa
it.
Wins a race. It's like, oh, they should focus on him and forget about Kimi. He's not focused like Schumacher. Hamilton crashes into Kimi in Canada. Oh, he's got too many distractions, blah, blah, blah. Now he
the
wins
the race.
The press
have the answers.
In the rain and the dry, he's on top. But I hope we have a great season. I hope we have three drivers going to the final race and best man wins, you know. That'll be great.
I agree. And I hope Ferrari picks it up. They've got to get this solved because it was strange how the Ferrari didn't have pace. And then at the end of the race, Kimi was doing quite well.
Well, there were periods of time where Kimi's car was so much faster than the cars he was going by. It was ridiculous.
And then on the other hand, the Kimi Raikkonen, Fernando Alonso, and who was behind him? It was Yano Trulli. And that train, they never really separated. Pretty much the same pace. And then later on, Kimi picked up the pace, and then Felipe Massa at the end couldn't really catch Nelson Piquet.
So, the cars seemed to be unusually evenly matched. Everybody but Lewis, it seemed, nobody really had any kind of true performance edge on anybody else. They couldn't get that line on the inside corner down into the hairpin to get the turn. Or if they could, they didn't have the torque to get out of the turn ahead of the person they were trying to pass.
Exactly, and this time Ferrari couldn't blame the problems with bad team management in terms of the paddock and strategy. They were simply way outpaced. And how did McLaren come up with so much pace in such a short period of time? Because at the beginning of this season, it looked like Ferrari had it.
I think in the next race, which is Hungary, unless McLaren has totally caught up and passed Ferrari, is another story. But I think next race, they will be very competitive, maybe more than Ferrari. But I think Monza, Spa, you know, what is the race at Suzuka this year or at Fuji?
It's at Fuji again.
Fuji again, and then it goes
to Suzuka.
And
then it starts to.
Yeah. So some of these tracks will favor Ferrari. So it's going to be a pretty ding-dong of a battle this year.
Yeah, we'll
like
see.
Like last year.
In the news of the four-paddle shifter where they're controlling the torque of the engine at certain times of the race, I haven't seen anything where anybody's challenging that, because I think some teams are going to try to emulate that first, like Ferrari and Renault. They're definitely going to try to copy that. But if it doesn't work so well, then we'll see later on in the season a strategic picking up of the red phone.
The other problem with that is that's going to be on the driver, too, to pick the right settings at the right moments.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I think Hamilton is handling the four-paddle shifter better than Heikki Kovalainen.
Yeah, definitely. And it might be another one of those things where it's a line of code in the ECU that McLaren knows about and nobody else does.
That's true. They're cheating in two different ways already. Yes?
Well, it's one of those things, if you can't beat them, join them. So they'll try to copy, and they meaning Ferrari, and if they cannot copy and produce the same result, then you complain.
Exactly. So that's standard procedure. Yeah.
And I have an issue with your statement that Hamilton is using it better than Heikki. I just think this kid is faster than Heikki. Heikki
it looks that way.
Realizing what Alonso realized. Not that I'm a fan of Hamilton or I don't like Kovalainen, but we're now halfway through the season. I think we pretty much know what the score is.
Well, the pass on Kovalainen at Silverstone in the wet was pretty obvious and dominant. And some people in this race and the German Grand Prix are saying that Kovalainen pulled over and let him go by. And of course, the team order flags were thrown.
In this case, I can buy that.
Well, he's too far down in points to be fighting for the championship. Yeah. If I was a team boss, I would have told him to let Lewis by.
But did you on that? This is another reason to watch the ITV feed. You know, they had a lot of coverage after the race interview, and they even go on with them speaking their national languages, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. You know, when this guy Norbert Hogg was hugging Hamilton, he said, we made a mistake. You know, that you won't see when they're cutting to too many commercials. And
oh, no, I like that about the ITV. You get to see them. And I talked about that on our race coverage where while they're getting their water, I thought there was a little bit too much hugging and kissing there. Hamilton getting hugged by Massa. I mean, maybe a handshake, but come on.
Well, to each his own, man.
I don't like it.
Yeah, to each his own.
I think they should fight all the way to the end.
Well, the concept that has been taken over in IRL now?
Exactly. Okay. And we'll talk about that later because it's a lot of laughs.
Absolutely.
Exactly. What about BMW's pace in this race? I thought Nick Heidfeld had a great race, Stephen.
Nick had a great race. Robert, not so much. And the BMW, not necessarily, they're not showing any leaps and bounds in their performance.
Well, they're at that place where they're right behind, so they won in Canada. They some luck there. But, that final leap in performance is extremely hard to find. And this is a fine example of it. You think it's coming, and then, nope, not yet. That's part of the development in Formula 1.
And I think maybe one of the things that may be slowing BMW down, being a team that hasn't been around as long as, say, a McLaren or a Ferrari, is they're not as likely to go for an innovative step like McLaren's traction control or McLaren's torque setting paddles or like a Renault with a mass damper or some of the other things that have been tried by other teams, they're a little bit more conservative in trying to wring everything out of their current technology rather than trying to drop something new in and work that way. Like, you know, we see other top-tier teams do.
Yeah, exactly. Your thoughts on Kubica's performance?
Well, I mean, it looks like Heidfeld was pretty much out the door. Now he's only a few points behind him. And it looks like that they have reached their, you know, plateau as how far as they can go with this package. And I guess they'll have to just, you know, come back with more whatever they can do to get this thing go faster.
Well, I think the development on the 2008 car is going to continue. Dr. Thiessen is eager to hold on to second place in the constructors.
Yeah, which is very impressive.
It's very impressive.
Yeah, if they can finish ahead of McLaren, it'll be very, very impressive.
So as long as they finish in the points, I think they're going to be okay. And I think they'll probably do a little bit better at the Hungaroring because I think it might suit their car just a little bit better. But of course, you think Ferrari will dominate?
No, I think because of the nature of the track, McLaren might have an advantage, and I think Ferrari will get back to their winning ways in races like Spa and Monza, unless McLaren has really caught up completely.
Or maybe Renault could come up with...
Who?
You know, Fernando.
If you put torque controls in Fernando's hands, that car would probably be, you know, another six-tenths.
Yeah, let's not forget... Hungary is where Fernando won his first race.
And actually, I was telling Clark earlier, what Ferrari really needs to do is put brake bias controls on their steering wheel so their poor guys don't have to keep reaching down into the corner of the cockpit to adjust them.
Hungary is the place he won his first race and also the place where he first sprayed mace on Ron Dennis.
Exactly. Yeah. That's my favorite plot. It's wonderful. Isn't it exciting?
Yeah, you know what happened there last year.
Of course. Oh, the memories.
The Hungarian Rhapsody.
Yeah, I thought it was exciting. That's because Hamilton didn't listen. Quality. He didn't obey his commander. When the commander says, you must let Fernando by, you should let Fernando by. But some people want to be machismo. And when you have two machismos, you have problems. Just like we have here at F1 Weekly.
Well, you know, talking of muy macho hombre de Oviedo en España, Mr. Fernando Alonso, great driver. You know, it's never in question. But, you know, I have what I call the Engelbert Humperdinck moment for him. Should I go or should I stay? The band has one more song to play. You know, now there are, I tell you what is going on here on the F1-Live.com, which used to be known as DailyF1.com. There is an article which I would suggest you and whoever is interested go to it. It's called Media Unimpressed with Alonso. And they're not talking about the English media. Apparently some in the Spanish media are saying, and this is their verbiage, not mine, so please, no hate mail for a change. Alonso has returned to the Minardi days, which is when he really made his name. I mean,
I
can look at it.
But please, I mean, they're pushing it a little.
Yeah, but you know, you got to understand this thing. He is the one who put himself in that position, okay? Plus there is pressure. Now again, these are reports, I don't know if they're totally correct, that Renault is pressing him to confirm his availability to the team no later than September, of course, of this year. And there are accusations, this I don't buy, but it might be true, that he did not congratulate publicly his teammate on his first podium in Germany. And according to this article that some very respectable Spanish journalist said, well, he did send him a congratulations on, you know, text message. So text message, anytime I hear text message, you know who I think of.
But you know what?
But I got to tell you this thing, the final word on this must come from his Remus, Flavio Briatore, who in an interview with BBC podcast said, they asked him about his two drivers. He said, we need to change the helmets.
I don't believe any of this crap. Fernando will be at Renault next year because Kimi's going to stay at Ferrari. The driver lineup is not going to change at Ferrari for next year.
No, I don't think so. And I think when all is said and done, Mr. Alonso will be at Ferrari in 2010. There is too many reports about this, so it will come true sooner or later.
What about the latest one about Honda courting it? Honda courting him.
No, well, but this came and went, but this Ferrari is just coming back again and again. But I think he should go to Ferrari or any other competitive team on what I would call the Priceline program, name your teammate. And I do have a caution for him. you know, on the rear view mirror says objects, blah, blah, blah.
Are closer than they appear?
Yeah, he should have on his rear view mirror. Teammates in rear view mirror may be faster than you think. Just a caution.
I understand, Nasser, and I'm going to suggest.
I'm looking out for your man.
I know, and I've already sent an email to Fernando suggesting that he should choose.
Message, you text message? You
I did text message him, and I said, you should choose Rubinho for your teammate.
Yeah, or Sutil may not be a bad idea.
Perfect, huh?
Milka Duno, they can speak Spanish.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yeah.
His wife might not like that, though. Fernando, he's married.
Oh, he's married now?
Yeah, but his wife doesn't hang out in the pits, you know, and his papito doesn't hang out, you know.
Where does she hang out? She's on Kimmy's board?
Ay, ay, chiquito.
It's a joke. It's
I understand.
A joke.
I understand. It's serious business here. Excellent. Keep up the good work. Let's move right along. Any impressions on Giancarlo Fisichella in the race? Yes, he was there.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, no, him, and I like the love fest he has with his teammate, who unfortunately had a big accident. But good news is that he's okay. And Timo Glock, just as a sidebar, will be at the Monterey Historic next month. So hopefully, I'll get a chance to talk to him about his big bang at the Hockenheimring.
Ask him if Nelsinho sent him some flowers or some candy or some kind of gift for giving him the podium.
Oh yeah, exactly. So we'll see what happens.
Exactly. So anyway, all in all, a great race, and I think that Fernando will pick up the pace and be back on track at the Hungaroring. Just as a...
You're not talking about the salsa, pace salsa.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Thank you very much. No, I thought...
Guy is a tremendous driver. See, I want to see him in a good car so we can have another, you know, four-way battle. So I'm not trying to knock the guy as a driver.
I know. You don't knock any drivers because you're that kind of a guy.
Oh, thank you.
I noticed that. Quickly to some of the happenings in Jerez, España during testing this week. Sebastian Vettel he gets eighth place, gets a point. I thought he drove great in Germany.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, he was pumped up, home crowd. He's got the contract for RBR, and it showed. I thought he was much more machismo. Then he goes to Spain, and he's been on the top of the timesheets all, I think, 2 days. The past 2 days he's been on top.
Is he driving the STR or the RBR?
STR. He's a Toro Rosso driver.
Yeah, but no, he's tested the RBR before in testing.
I know.
I read someplace that somebody was saying that the STR might actually be a little bit faster because of its Ferrari power plant. I found that hard to believe because nobody in a Ferrari with a Ferrari power plant wins a race. So why would they be faster?
No, not only that, but what I find interesting is, and Mario Tyson said that all these engines, because of the homologation, are very evenly matched.
Yeah, you're not going to get that much extra performance out of, you know, it's going to really be insignificant over the total
performance. Well, the problem
performance
is
of the car
is the choice in gear ratios, tire pressures, camber.
Yeah, there are far too many other...
there's so many variables, it's out of control.
Exactly.
And, you know, those people who are cheating with that pseudo traction control, that really gives you an edge, I think. So, but no, Vettel, he's looking more and more and more like the great driver that everybody's predicted that he will be. Very impressive stuff.
Very impressive.
Nass, your thoughts on Vettel?
No, I tell you, I want to get something off my chest, but I don't want to piss off people. You know, I mean, when we express our opinion, we get these people, oh, you're knocking down my driver.
Don't worry,
all
those emails are usually addressed to me.
Yeah, but no, but I, you know, my feelings are hurt if I hurt somebody else's feeling. But okay, I'll put it this way. Next year, he will be the man of the team he is. There's no question in my mind. And I think this guy is special talent, just like Lewis Hamilton. Might be even more than that. We'll find out next year. And a lot of times, you know, guys come with this kind of predictions or expectations and hype or whatever. Yeah, any word you can use. And then they, you know, go flat. But I just think this kid is good, very good.
So Mark,
and when I'm saying good, I'm saying compared to a Kimi and a Alonso and a Hamilton, not compared to a Sato or a, you know, somebody else.
Of course. So he's going to give Mark Webber a run for his money.
Yeah.
He's probably going to leave Mark in the dust.
Steve Fobb said that, and his email address is steve@fonweekly.com. No, thank you.
I think it's true, and of course they were testing some of the slick tires today, which come out with great times, and they're still working on the compounds. This test is not only for the teams, but it's for Bridgestone as well. And everybody tested except for one driver.
Who?
Kimi Raikkonen. And this is, every time there's an opportunity for slick tires to be tested, Kimi declines to test slick tires. It's almost like he's afraid that it's going to jinx his Finlandia coupons that he gets over at the grocery store.
Nothing bothers this guy, let me tell you that.
I understand, but he won't test on the slicks.
Yeah.
He's the only driver that hasn't tested on the slicks.
I will tell you something. Slicks are coming back next year. Do not be surprised if he is the guy on pole position first race. And that's what top talent does.
Okay, I'm writing this down.
Mark my words.
Ferrari, pole position, yeah. Melbourne, 2009.
Huh. Kimi Räikkönen.
Yeah, but the problem is, I've already talked about this, and I have Fernando on pole in 2009 on Melbourne.
They don't have a GP2 race there.
But anyway, just Fernando doing in Porsche Cup.
No, Fernando is fine. I'm just trying to fire
Roger's rockets.
We have to. I'm just trying to fire Roger's rockets. That's all. And this is the first time you're not wearing a Renault cab.
That's true. I forgot.
So
my
it's
Renault
not
cab.
Only the Spanish media that's abandoning him. It's the host with the most also.
No, I'm not abandoning him, but...
What is FSU football doing on your head?
It just happened to be in the car, and today was sunny. I wanted to block the sun. You know, and the lights in the studio can get really warm.
Oh, wow. Anyway, just with the confirmation of Mr. You know, my favorite thing about Sebastian Vettel, you know, this website, how do you pronounce your name? I think it's called namethatdriver.com. They're asking all these
That's
drivers.
That's one of our favorite sites.
Yeah, and all these drivers are saying how to pronounce their name. And they ask him, what is the worst you have heard for your name? And Sebastian Vettel says, the worst I heard was Sebastian Vettel.
I like the water.
Yeah.
But so, I've noticed a lot of people pronouncing his name Vettel.
No, actually, it's
Rosberg says Vettel.
It's Rosberg.
Rosberg. His name. Well, I'm in San Jose, California. I can say it the way I want.
Okay, Mr. Hot Dog.
No problem.
Okay, anyway, with the confirmation of Sebastian Vettel at Red Bull on the eve of the German Grand Prix, which is, of course, his home Grand Prix, stage, I think, is now set for another German superstar to emerge. Let's hope he has performance-based escape clause in his contract. Otherwise, spending 3 to 5 years in a non-Grand Prix winning environment is not going to keep his name at the top of the list of top teams. But, you know, he has been sponsored by Red Bull for a while, for quite a few years now, so he may be, like, at their whims and wishes. And Mr. Marischitz has all the money, so it will be very hard to buy his contract out.
And we all know that, and he's admitted it, his manager is him. He's managing himself. He has no, you know, hot dog in the back pocket.
You know what he said about having a manager? I can get to the track by myself.
Yeah. And that's a really good answer. I think it's sophisticated.
Yeah. And anyway.
I'm surprised a Willie Weber hasn't approached him and said,
I'm sure he has.
Well, probably because he got picked up by Red Bull at a very young age.
That's true.
And he hasn't really needed much management, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, you do need management for guidance, and so people don't. I think not so much to help you in your drive the car. Obviously, is basically you don't get taken. You know, if you don't walk into a contract with a Willie Weber or a Flavio with a shrewd manager or an attorney, I mean, you can be in for a big surprise.
Well, that's why I mentioned that, because you said hopefully he'll have a performance clause in his contract.
Yeah, but that's where your man went wrong when he went to McLaren and signing a contract. Knowing fully well this team does not do a 1-2, that's where he should have had either Flavio or somebody with him, that, hey, I'm number one, what I say goes. And that's, and you know, he was right. Had they let him pass Hamilton at the... even the United States Grand Prix, when he, you know, mm-hmm. came over to the pit as his... to show his protest anger, he would have been world champion. So, you know, you just don't want... When you get to that level, you have to have good people around you.
I agree. You really
There's
do.
No, yeah.
Because and let's not forget that Alonso swung this deal with McLaren on his own.
Yeah.
Sidelining.
I'll give you another very good example. Giorgio Pantano. This kid beat Kubica and quite a few drivers who were in Formula One. And he is now claiming that his career got... stalled because he had bad management. Because, you know, and I heard from somebody, I won't take the name here, that Gary Paffert pretty much had a deal to join Sauber, but his manager held out for more money, and they went, and these things happen.
Oh, of course, because the manager's lining his pockets.
Yeah, so you just have to have good, shrewd, smart people around you where they can just see beyond 10%, 20% commission.
Yeah, no, it's pretty frightening when you really give it some thought.
And the other reason to have a manager is to avoid the distractions, not having to worry about your next contract. Someone to set you up and get you those endorsement contracts where, you know, Michael Schumacher probably made more money in endorsements than he ever made as a driver.
And I'm glad you said that. You know, Montoya, again, I was not there. I don't know if it's true, but I've read a few places. One of the problems he was having with Ron Dennis is Ron Dennis was demanding not to bring a huge entourage. I mean, when you get to Formula One, it's pretty serious business. You don't want 50 members of your family and friends to show up at every race. It's a lot of distraction, and it requires a lot of focus.
I agree. And Montoya's wife was always there.
Yeah. Well, wife and mom, I mean, a couple of people I can understand that, but you just don't show up with third cousin and fourth cousin from all the way from Colombia to Calcutta. You know, it doesn't go that way. And you look at some of the decisions that some drivers made. Mika Hakkinen, for example, was offered a drive by Ligier as a driver and a test drive by McLaren. And he listened to his manager, Keke Rosberg, at that time and took the smart decision. And then on the other hand, we have your muy macho de hombre from Avignon, Monsieur Alesi. He had a Williams contract early in the 1990s. He had signed the contract, and then when call came for Ferrari, he got all emotional and, you know, asked Frank Williams to release him.
Yeah, well, that's because the problem with that is he let his Sicilian roots start talking to him and overtook the French sensibility. Yeah. But anyway, poor Jean-Louis, what a career, huh? One win?
Okay, on his birthday, though. Okay, from one Sebastian to another, Monsieur Bourdais, he is now feeling the... But today I had some good news that they might retain him. But he is now feeling the same pressure that Scott Speed from Mentica was subjected to same time last year. Not being able to outperform Vettel should not be held against him, and men should get a second chance season at least to prove his worth, because I don't think there are many drivers who will outpace Sebastian Vettel.
I agree, and you know what? I think Bourdais is being very mature about it. He's admitted that he's having some problems with the new RBR that he didn't have with the old RBR after Monaco, but nevertheless, he will be there next year. I believe so.
I hope
because
so.
Because he's a steady driver, and he's got good technical input. I think he helps the team develop the car, and they want some stability in the team because they still don't know who the rookie is going to be.
You know,
I mean,
what,
be anybody.
What the best stability for a small team like STR is?
Tell me.
Lots of cash.
And they have
it balances the team. So with Bruno Senna knocking on the door, good friend, family friend with Gerhard Berger, and Pantano doing very well in GP2. I mean, I would love to see Bourdais get another chance. You have to give the guy a reasonable chance, but I won't be surprised if Pantano comes up with some money and they say, "Hey, see you later, pal."
It's very possible. Let me put it this way: they put up with Scott Speed for 2 years. Please. Let's give Bourdais another chance, just for La France.
Yeah, I think they should.
I think they will. He's a good man.
Yeah, but then again, you know, Sato is trying to get back into Formula One. And then, you know, you and I were discussing earlier, Salvador Duran of Mexico has been mentioned just because he has backing from Carlos Slim and his Telmex empire. You know, he's, I think, the richest man now, Carlos Slim from Mexico.
Yeah, multi-billionaire.
Yeah, and interestingly, Bruno Senna's sponsor is Imbratel, a Brazilian telco, but that is also part of the Telmex company, so quite a few deals may
I think, doesn't Bruno have Santander on his side as well?
Yeah, he does.
Yes.
So quite a few deals may be ringing at Toro Rosso before the season is over.
I agree. They have a lot of decisions to make. Real quickly before we go into the wrap-up, I'm excited about Michelin going into A1GP. I think it makes them a much more serious series. Now that they're powered by Ferrari, shod by Michelin, you can't get better than that. This makes them a full-fledged series. Your thoughts on that real quickly, and how do you think Bernie feels about that?
Well, if it makes him money, he'll feel good about it. That's all he cares.
It's not going to make him money. It could even take viewers away, even though the schedule is a little bit different. They're more of a winter series.
No, I don't think the concept of Formula One is very different than A1GP. So I don't think it will be a problem. Plus, the whole idea of A1GP was to have racing in the off-season.
Yeah.
I do like the nation versus nation
I do like that
thing.
Too.
And, but talking about Michelin, I'm very happy. It's good to see them back. And I hope they get rid of this stupid spec tire rule in Formula One.
I agree.
Formula One is all about competition.
So 2006 was an exciting series when
absolutely.
Michelin and Brickstone were going head-to-head. But what I like about Michelin and Ferrari being an A1GP, I think it's going to be another good series for young talent to move up the chain, move up the ladder, because it's a good series. It's a great car. It's based on the F2004, and I'm looking forward to watching some of these races.
Yeah, and also, you know, just to brief her about Honda, according to our listener, longtime listener in Holland, Mr. Elman van Doren, he sent me an email saying there are reports in Europe that Honda is utilizing up to 5 wind tunnels working on their 2009 car. And as you know, their Earth Dream car has been a racing nightmare for quite a while now. And hopefully with the resources they have and proper guidance from Ross Braun, excuse moi, the long-awaited Honda winning ways will come
is
back.
Is that the German Ron Dennis?
No, I was referring to the Scottish Ron Dennis. Scottish Ron McDennis.
I like that.
No, I would love to. Honda is my favorite team, as I've said before. I would like to see them get back to their winning ways.
Okay, very good. The producer's waving at me, so we're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with the spinning globe activities of Motorsport Mondial. We'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with the king of Karachi himself and Motorsports Mondial, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Welcome back to the studio, Nasser. How are you?
Well, with a little German flavor, we say greetings. Racing regards to all the listeners from Anaheim to Hockenheim. And today's coverage goes from tie is broken in Formula One to a towel fight in IRL. And we will soak up rest of the weekend's racing news from around the world. Did you see any of the action from Mid-Ohio IRL race and the practice?
I saw the most important action.
Okay, we'll talk about it a little bit later.
Excellent.
You know, they say love and charity begins at home, so well, today is Motorsports Mondial, and we have racing on two wheels from our own backyard, Laguna Seca, which is about an hour and a half drive from where we are, our executive offices at F1 Weekly. Okay, the Doctor versus the Ducati in the MotoGP, sponsored by Red Bull, and what a Rossi and Stoner stampede we had. Moi was there and enjoyed the event very much. The Australian world champion started from pole position, and right from the start, we had Dijon Prenois, 1979, including Rossi's.
He's off! He's back again! That's incredible!
Yeah, it was great. The Doctor even pulled out a Zanardi on Stoner in the famous corkscrew. The battle royale was going to go to the wire till Stoner went wide on the last corner and fell in the gravel with less than 10 laps to go. This allowed the Doctor to gently ride his Yamaha to his first victory at Laguna Seca without further pain from the Australian patient. Great, great race, and they were changing positions on a particular lap.
I read on our forum that a lot of people thought this was outstanding and compared it to Dijon Prenois, 1979.
It was great. Casey Stoner kept his second place but not his cool. After the race, he complained about Rossi's aggressive style. Fellow Aussie Chris Vermeulen was third on his beautiful Rizla Suzuki. This Suzuki I've seen every year they come here. Reminds me, the blue color, light blue, reminds me so much of Matt Reich.
Oh.
Very, very nostalgic for me. Italian Andrea Dovizioso was fourth on a Honda after another great battle with fellow Honda rider Nicky Hayden, who finished fifth and was the highest placed American. And if I'm not mistaken, Nicky Hayden won the first two MotoGP races here, and when they did the first time, that was his first MotoGP win. You know, last week one of our listeners, Alan O'Brien, was asking about the skills of motorcycle racers versus racing drivers. Well, the answer was right before my eyes again on Sunday. Incredible excitement for all the fans, and you know, when you have something like this, it's credit both to Rossi and Stoner, even though he did not win, for putting in such a great show. It's just like, you know, Arnoux is responsible for half of the excitement at Dijon.
Exactly.
Rossi's lead in the championship rises to 25 points over Casey Stoner, and rumors are that Nicky Hayden may jump from Honda to Ducati for 2009. So that should be interesting.
That's big news.
Yeah. Kentucky kid on a Bologna Ducati. That'll be something.
Exactly.
GP2, support race to the Formula One race, Formel 1, as the natives would call it.
Powered by Renault.
Oh, yeah. Every win is a Renault win.
Oh!
Saturday, you know, I wish I knew some people I could call on this. I would love to see, you know, they have GP2 Asia, to have a GP2 Americas or GP2 USA, whatever you want to call it, and have those cars here. And they just, you know, instead of saying powered by Renault, say powered by Nissan, because it's the same company, basically. And it would be nice to have those high-tech cars here.
I think it would be wonderful, but yeah. Unfortunately, the American fan base is not very good. If you remember when A1GP came here, there were more press than fans.
Quite a few hundred showed up.
Yeah,
I think
it was
200.
Exciting.
Well,
yeah.
If there'd just been just a tiny bit of promotion for that race, there might have been a few more
true people
there.
Yeah, that's true. But
you know, talking of promotion, I was talking to Ed Nichols, who is the PR guy at Laguna Seca, and the MotoGP and issue of A1GP came up, and I told him that, you know, I was. The promotion was not very good, and he said that what the A1GP people did, they kept the promotional rights to themselves. They did not give it to Laguna Seca to promote the event, which I think they should have done that because they would know better how to promote.
Yeah, and the local radio stations, if I recall, started promoting it about a week before the race.
Yeah, and California people need at least 2 months' notice.
Very much.
As
very
busy
very
as they are.
At least a month. You need to do it for all 4 weeks in between to
Be
reminded.
Yeah. Okay, going back to GP2, Saturday's feature race was interesting, was won by Romain Grosjean on the track. Instead of receiving the trophy, he was handed a 25-second penalty for passing a lap down Marco Asmer under a yellow. And this demoted him to second and promoted Giorgio Pantano to the top of the podium. In Barcelona, Grosjean lost a certain win when he blocked Kamui Kobayashi very aggressively after a caution. The kid is quick, and hopefully he will learn from experience. And this week he's doing some testing for Renault and the Jerez.
And Jerez, And this is a good lesson. This is a good way to learn because you get a lot of silly stuff like this in Formula One. And I remember when Fernando was penalized for that block on Massa.
Oh, that was complete nonsense.
Yeah,
At Monza, that was ridiculous.
It was ridiculous.
That was beyond ridiculous.
But that was that season. That season had a lot of strange stuff. So this will build character for Romain Grosjean.
Wasn't somebody blocked in Hungary in qualifying also?
I'm not sure, but we'll talk about that.
You may
one
have
day.
Forgotten that.
Yeah.
Okay. Alvaro Parent of Portugal, who won the season opener in Barcelona, was third ahead of Bruno Senna in fourth. Sunday's sprint race winner from pole position was Karun Chanduk for iSport International, making him Bruno Senna's teammate. First win of the season, second of his career for the Indian driver from Chennai. And Austrian Andreas Zuber was second, Bruno Senna third, and Grosjean fourth. In the championship, Giorgio Pantano, grand old man of GP2, extends his lead to 15 points over Bruno Senna, who is 14 points ahead of third placeman Romain Grosjean. And it will be interesting how this season pans out.
Exactly, because there's a number of races to go, and this could definitely have a few changes.
Yeah, but you know what is impressive is that Giorgio Pantano has done a lot of races, and you know when you win, it's great. Bruno Senna is in his second year, and he's doing a very good job. Grosjean is in his first year in GP2, and he's right there in terms of pace. So I think he should be able to put it all together by the end of the season. Now we come to also at Hockenheim, Formula BMW Europe. We have a case of six-pack Gutierrez. Young Mexican driver Esteban Gutierrez is on a hot roll. He won both races from pole position and also recorded the fastest lap in each race. He is now unbeaten in the last six races of Formula BMW Europe Series. The only event he did not win was the opening round in Barcelona in April, where he was on podium in both races. And both those races were won by Adrian
And you
Tomby.
Interviewed him right after that opening round. Am I correct?
That is correct, sir.
See, so after the interview, all his wins come.
Well, you're so kind, Mr. Rogers.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I may have to vote for Alonso now.
You should.
For next year's poll at Australia. Okay. Esteban extends his lead in the championship to 226 points over second place Adrian Tomby on 180 points. And Adrian Tombe's Pepito, I am told, Patrick Tombe, is coming to the Monterey Historic also. And quite a few other people like Jean-Pierre Jarier and Alan Jones from Australia. So anybody wants to go there, these folks will be
and
there too.
And you and Patrick are now close Boudreaux.
Boudreaux. And my understanding is among the luminaries there would be Clark Rogers there.
Exactly.
Also. Okay. Okay, in race one of Formula BMW, the world was well represented as Gutierrez was followed by Adrian Tomby of France, who was second, Marco Wittmann of Germany third, and fourth was Jasmine Jaffer of Malaysia. And I'm pleased to say F1 Weekly listener Kazim Manzoor, who is a rookie this year, was ninth in this race.
Excellent. Whenever you break into the top 10, it's good news.
Oh, absolutely. And he's right there in terms of his speed, you know, in terms of time, just lacking an experience, which only comes with time. So we wish him and everybody all the best. In race two, podium faces and places were the same. Gutierrez again the winner over Tombay and Wittmann. Alexander Rossi from Northern California was 10th in a one-off drive in the European Series. And we interviewed Alexander Rossi last year, and he's doing very well in the main series he's competing, which is the Formula BMW Americas. In other Formula BMW news, Konica Minolta has been announced as an official partner of the Formula BMW Europe Series. A1GP, you have already mentioned that in the opening, so I'll pass on that. But wait, there's more A1GP news. The South African round will move from the, I don't know why they did this, but it's moving from the popular and well-attended street race in Durban to Kyalami near Johannesburg, home of the South African Formula One Grand Prix in days gone by. And I'm sure you remember Kyalami. Jim Clark's final Grand Prix win came at this track on New Year's Day in 1968.
Well, we've had a lot of great Formula One races at this track, and I'm surprised they changed because the street race was very popular and very well attended.
Yeah.
But there might have been some political issues with the city.
Oh, yeah.
There's always something.
And
there's
exactly, contracts and other things going on.
And it's easier to move to a track that's already established.
Yeah, whenever there is money, there is three things that are always there. Greed, politics, and of course, the pit babes. Never fails. Okay, you mentioned about Michelin being the sole supplier, replacing Cooper tires, Cooper/Avon. So that's taken care of. Now we come to Indy Racing League, IRL, from Mid-Ohio, a very nice track in Ohio. Australian Ryan Briscoe takes the win over Penske teammate from Brazil, Elio Castro Neves. Scott Dixon, the Indy winner from New Zealand, was third. And now we come to our Ted Nugent segment called
Cat Scratch Fever!
Meow! Okay, the pit lane potpourri between Danica Patrick and Milka Duno was more fun than the street fight between Paul Tracy and Alex Tagliani here in San Jose. And if I ever see Milka Duno again, I'm going to have her sign a small inner towel for me as a memento.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You remember signed my Danica Patrick shirt.
Oh, cool.
That I wear at special occasions.
You like show. Okay, if you recall some weeks back, I said that sooner or later, Miss Patrick will step on the wrong toes, and especially with the series merging and the pending arrival of Paul Tracy, and you have to watch Paul PT.
I'm waiting for that. That should be interesting.
Yeah. She finally ran into a driver who had the balls, no pun intended, to pounce back, and now Danica Duno, who not to mess with, Milka from Venezuela. She read the Latin right tag to Scottsdale Scarlett, and please enjoy it on YouTube.
I have no idea what you're doing out there. You're going to be sexy. What are you doing?
Go. Is you have me or you can see? Is you in front of me? Go. I see you. Is you in front of me?
What the hell? It's not working.
I just want to talk to her about it. I've been having 3 times this weekend.
Find your best.
Look, I just
no, you like show. You like show. Go, far away up here. You like show. If you are fast, pass because you are fast, yes? Because if you come fast, without no problem.
When you're in the corner and you turn down.
Oh,
do you see? All I want to know is if you see me.
Please go away. Go away.
Do you think that you're not even
here?
And you know, boys will be boys, girls will be girls. I'm not going to take sides in who was right or wrong, but it was a good show.
It was a good show, and I'm sure this is going to be one of the most watched YouTube clips for the next coming weeks.
Yeah, and this is an actual email that was sent to Dave Despain on Wind Tunnel TV program here in the U.S., folks. And this guy writes that what IRL really should do is capitalize on this and arrange a bikini fight between the two in a jello tub.
Yeah!
Yeah, ratings will go through the roof. Okay, more IRL news. Good news for Paul Tracy. He will race in the Edmonton event later this month. He is the sandwich in a deal between Vision Racing of Tony George and Walker Racing. Sponsorship comes from Subway, like PT needs another bite. I say hold the pickles.
Keep up the good work, Nats.
I'm trying. Okay, Indy Lights at Mid-Ohio. Brazilian Rafael Matos was the winner in race one over Frank Pereira from your Fantasyland and Richard Antonucci. J.R. Hildebrand from Sausalito next to San Francisco was fifth. Race two was won by James Davison. There were two ladies in the top five. Swiss Miss Cindy Alemão was fourth ahead of Brazilian Ana Beatriz in fifth, who won a race last weekend.
But no fighting between these two.
No, not yet. Not that we know of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not that made it to YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you have made it when you come on YouTube or appear on Pink's. Okay, American Le Mans at Mid-Ohio. Round six saw all German win with Lucas Lohr and Marco Werner taking the win over their Italian Audi teammates, Dindo Capello and Emmanuel Pirro. Penske Racing Porsche was third with Timo Bernhard of Germany and Romain Dumas of France at the wheel. Unfortunately, a crew member of Gilles de Ferrand's Acura team, Keith Jones, received serious burn injuries during a pit fire, and we wish him safe and speedy recovery. He has been transferred to a hospital in Indianapolis, so we wish him all the best. It was a pretty scary-looking scene at the pits, a lot of fire. Grand Am Series, they were in action at the beautiful Barber. Have you ever seen an event at Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham, Alabama?
Only on television.
Beautiful, beautiful facility.
A lot of green, nice place.
Very nice.
It gets warm there.
Yeah. Sixth win of the season for Scott Pruitt and Memo Rojas in their Lexus-powered Riley. Australian V8, mate, at Queensland Raceway, City of Ipswich 400. A Ford 1-2 in race 1 with James Courtney winning over Mark Winterbottom. Russell Engel was third for Holden. Race 2 again saw two Ford's drivers on the podium. Winterbottom was the winner and Jamie Winkup third. They were split by the Holden of Russell Engel.
I would really like to see Toyota get into the Australian V8s.
Well, I know they make Mitsubishi cars there. I'm not sure if Toyota has a factory there, but that'll be nice.
Because this GM Ford battle, it's getting a little old for me.
But it's a very popular series.
Oh, battle. I know. It's very, it's hugely popular.
Yeah. And they make right and left turns, so I do enjoy it when they show it here. And that, you know, window of opportunity we get between, like, December 19th to December 24th.
From, like right after end of October, specials. Beginning of February.
Yeah. And they have some very nice tracks down there. Okay, the third and final race of the weekend. You know, they actually race now in one round in Bahrain also.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So they're spreading their wings. Third and final race of the weekend saw another win for Winterbottom. James Courtney was second and Russell Engel third. NASCAR Nationwide Series, the baby NASCAR series, Carl Edwards, the backflip expert, was the winner in his Ford at Gateway International Raceway in Missouri, or as the natives would call it, Missouri. Joey Logano was second for Toyota and Jason Keller third in a Chevrolet. And here is the shocker. There was no Sprint Cup race past weekend, and that is the reason the host is teary-eyed today. So teary-eyed, he has a football cap on him.
Exactly, yeah. And this is in dedication to that.
Yeah, exactly. Il Leone is back with his Cubs. Nigel Mansell was at Estoril last week with his sons Greg and Leo, testing a Lola sports car. The best of Birmingham may race in American Le Mans Series next year. The kids have not made the impact in single-seaters when compared to the career-long portion show of Dear Daddy. Finally, before I roll out of the office, just a note on the F1 Championship situation. Hamilton leading with 58 points, Massa second, 54 points, Raikkonen third, 51 points, and Kubica fourth, 48. In the Constructors' Championship, Ferrari leading, 105 points, BMW 89 points second, and McLaren third with 86. Thank you for listening, and adios, amigos.
Thanks, Nasser. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be back with the wrap-up and some emails. We'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label, Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, we have a few emails. Steven?
Woohoo! First email is from Gary Davies of South Australia. He writes, "Nothing wrong with a bit of praise. Hi, guys. A short message from an absolute addict to your podcasts. The spirit, the atmospherics that come through are just delightful. Sure, they're informative, but that's not the point. Information is the one thing the web has in abundance. No, I like the F1 Weekly podcast because it puts a smile on my face every time. You may be interested in the routine of one of your addicts. I plug my iPod into my MacBook at work in downtown Adelaide, South Australia, most days, and when I see that an F1 Weekly podcast has come down the tube, I remember to hook up the iPod into its little FM transmitter in my Volkswagen Golf Diesel. Don't laugh, man, it really goes. And listen to the podcast, or most of it, on the way home. Sure beats listening to current affairs on the radio, which is wrist-slitting material these days. Keep up the good work, guys. I love it. One final thing. Congrats to Nasser on the Von Trips Museum piece. Fabulous. I learned a lot, and F1 history is my big thing. Donc, Sean, warmest regards, Gary of Adelaide, South Australia." Thank you, Gary. That was a good one.
Outstanding. And now we have an email that's actually to Nasser, but Nasser is going to allow me the privilege.
Yes, this is from Dr. Kerry Beal. He is in San Diego, also one of our original listeners, and is enjoying his retirement years and traveling all over the world. So this is part of our Mongolian Mondial. He was at a sporting event, and I'll let you narrate this in your broadcast voice.
Excellent. Okay, yes, this is about Ulaanbaatar and the activities in terms of sports they have over there. Their horse race is 20 to 30 miles outside Ulaanbaatar. It is like the Indy 500 for the United States. They have 3 to 4 races that day in different categories, which has to do with the age of the horses. The biggest race is for 30 miles. They start at a big encampment, everyone dressed in their best native costumes. They stay there for days and party. The riders are little kids because of their light weight, some as young as 6 years old, and going up to 12 and 13. They gather and walk the horses from the encampment out for the 30 miles in a group. There are elders that accompany them, of course. I mean, a full speed for the whole distance. Incredible that these horses can do that. However, it seems that it is unusual that a few die. Sounds brutal.
So sad.
Also, multiple riders fall off occasionally. We were at the finish, and you could see this big dust cloud coming from 5 miles away. There were probably 100 horses in this race. They kept coming in for a half an hour. We saw several riderless horses come in and several that could barely walk. One guy was beating his horse to get over the finish, and the poor thing could hardly walk. When it finished, it just stood there. They couldn't get it. They couldn't get it to move for hours. To win this race is the biggest thing in the country. I don't think that Rubens, the four-legged one, would ever finish. Maybe your listeners would enjoy this little story in Racing Mondiale. Thanks for keeping in touch. Keep up the good work. Carrie, outstanding stuff out in Ulaanbaatar, which of course we all know is the capital of Mongolia.
Oh, I'm sure everybody knows that.
Exactly.
Thank you, Doctor.
Outstanding stuff. Yep. Any more Mongolians out there that I would like to email, please. We need more news on that outstanding horse race. Okay, real quickly, let's wrap it up. Let's plug our boys over at the San Francisco Formula One group, www.sff1.com. Keep up the good work, Peter. They will be at the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill for every race to watch the races live. The flag usually drops at 10, and they have a wonderful brunch. You could contact these guys at the restaurant, the Bar and Grill, Overtime Sports Bar and Grill to be exact, at 398 7th at Harrison. The phone number is 415-863-1688 in beautiful downtown San Francisco. We'd like to mention our MySpace site. You can visit us at myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. Real quickly, I want to get some updates on this long overdue DVD. Please, Nasser, tell us what's going on.
The Can-Am Odyssey of Speed. Well, first of all, thanks for the listeners who have inquired about the availability. I spoke to Mr. Nevison, who is the publisher, producer, I think 2 days ago, and he sent me an email that they are expecting shipment coming out by the end of this month, which is July. So hopefully we should have it in there. But, you know, nobody has it available right now. It's not being shipped out to any store. So it's not like that we are holding back or we're not delivering what we promise. It's just we have not received them. It's not out physically right now. So it should be coming soon. If you want to send us an email or anything about it, you know the email address. But as soon as we have, we'll ship them, airmail, and you will have them.
This is a very hard DVD to get, obviously, because I know people that have been waiting for this for almost a year and a half.
Sure.
Because it's been delayed quite a bit. I would suggest to anybody to email Nasser, and if you really want this DVD, to reserve a copy, because we're going to be just getting a limited number
sure.
of these DVDs because of the amount of demand from distributors all over the world. So you might want to email Nass, reserve your copy. That means you get that copy. It's done because Nass is a man of integrity.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
There you go. Real quickly, I'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast. Email us at info@f1weekly.com. That was my cowboy version of podcast. Podcast. So there you go. Thanks, everybody who makes this show possible. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for f1weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.